2028 is out for Pickleball Olympics, but 2032 is a really good option. And, you know, people love to make those posts about whatever, wall climbing or break dancing or all different kinds of stuff. Why not pickle?
We're not unified. The sport's plenty valid, right? You see in the other ridiculous sports in there. If you're an organized body that has everything in place that they need, then it's much easier. And we are just not that. So we've got to unify.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right. It feels right. Legendary.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Pickleball. Pickleball across the pond, Robert.
Oh, Adam. I'm in the land of the British.
The land of the British. I was wondering where you were going to go with that. Have you had an English breakfast yet?
Oh, yes, of course. I've had the baked beans with the eggs and the mushrooms and
what's the black
I like
thing?
It all.
The what's black the black thing? There's like black a thing. Cake, like a black thing cake that they put in there. It's like a black pudding or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have anything to do with that. I just keep it simple. Even baked beans freak me out for breakfast, so I don't touch that. What I do like that they do internationally, Adam, is that they lay out some nice salamis, some pepperonis, some cold cuts, some cheeses, like just for
prosciutto.
Breakfast, some little. Yes, for sure. Some little pickles, some little baby dills.
Baby dills. I got to watch him play
dill.
A little pickle.
He's a big dill now.
He's a big dill. I did say baby dill. We had four quality nicknames on court for that men's final, so I had to, to pull it out. But let's talk English Open first. International scene is popping, and I'm excited for all of it in a variety of places. We had a Bolivian and Argentinian winner on the PPA tour. We got rumblings of Southeast Asia and India, and of course across the pond in the English Open. How'd it go?
Hey man, the sport's reaching all corners of the globe right now, which is pretty dope. So English Open was fun again. It's it was double the size of last year, but it didn't necessarily feel like it was like that much busier. I think they spread it out across a couple more days this year. So it kind of maintained the feel of, you know, not insane, but great environment, great atmosphere. I love how they kind of structure their center court with, you know, Adam, this is clutch. The bleachers that they have they're brought in. They're not, I don't think they're from the facility, but they are cushioned.
Oh,
cushioned bleacher seats, which, you know, for somebody with my issues, cushions are a big deal. Like when I survey my surroundings and area, like one thing I think about is like, oh, that's like it's by default. Like that's a hard surface to sit on. Can't sit there. That's a hard surface. Even going to restaurants, Adam, where it's like if the seats don't have cushion, I'm not going there.
So you're a full booth guy now because booths always have cushions.
Booth, some bar stools are like really nice now that are big, heavy cushion ones. So
like those metal bleachers with the little grooves in it, you can't sit there for too long, and it gives me itchy butt. Like it makes my like actual cheeks itchy, and I'm not a fan. So especially if you're trying to watch pickle for 3 or 4+ hours, that's not the play.
Correct.
I like the old couples that bring their own seat cushions. That's kind of fun. I like that.
Or like the ones that have season tickets that just like post up their chairs and just leave them there the whole time, you know?
Just leave them.
Yeah.
Well,
so England was popping. It was fun.
Okay.
I talked to James Chowdhury, who's He kind of helps run. I think he's on maybe the board of directors and just helps with the operations and stuff. Good player. Played tennis at Mississippi State. Great pickleball player. Really good at singles. Hits the crap out of the ball. But, you know, has a real life and doesn't dedicate his whole life to playing pickle. But super talented. It would be really, really good if he was in the States. But he was mentioning that it's probably not going to be in Telford next year, which is this huge convention center. It just, you know, we're using the Pickleball United courts, and those courts are basically as good as the surface underneath them. And the surface underneath them's cement, but they're you're just not going to have a consistent cement. Like, there's parts where there's grooves, there's little drains, yeah. there's little nubs. Like, it creates issues. So they're going to, look at different options that can host 2,000 players. But pretty wild that, you know, England had a tournament that had 2,000 people from 42 different countries. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, gotcha. That's great. Were you able to hang out with my boys, Eric Bang Bang Lang and Purple Jesus, Max Manthau?
Yeah, Max, I didn't spend a ton of time with Max, but that was my first time meeting him, and super nice guy. I like him
chill,
a lot.
He's chill.
Super nice guy.
Yeah. I always poke at him that he's a burgeoning pickleball superstar, and he gets kind of no I'm not, and it's fun. They're good guys, and I know they had a nice run up there. They said that they played at least one team, if not multiple teams, of Indian players, and said they were very good, like had some tight games and some tight matches. And he said that the talent level is very reasonable with some of the teams that were in that draw.
Yeah, I mean, the level's getting better and better. But I will say one thing that we've got to, I mean, not we, but they've got to figure out, especially, you know, with money being involved. Let's talk about a free-for-all. No paddle testing. This guy's playing with a 20-millimeter paddle, just, you know, getting into firefights, somehow winning percentage. But still, like, if I was playing with a paddle that had a little pop, it would be shorter exchanges. But so, dude, it was wild. It was wild. Arman Bhatia, I think that's how you say it, was playing with a Yola that was, I mean, it was hotter than a Gen 3. It was ridiculous. I mean,
so it's
Ryler hits the ball hard.
Uh-huh. He does.
Ryler hits his forehand and his overhead. He slaps it really hard, and it looked like he was hitting with a pillow compared to this guy. I mean, it was talking to people that got off the court with him, he's like, this just isn't, like, it's not fun. Like, it's not fun when you're on court where somebody can do that to the ball and nobody else can. It's just not a level playing field. So we had, there's a fair amount of that this week, and mainly that paddle. That paddle was the biggest joke. But that's going to have to somehow be regulated moving forward. And they're not at a point now where it makes sense to do it, right? But moving forward, it's going to be a big issue internationally until they get some regulations in line.
Yeah, it seems to be the top thing. It's been an issue in the States and now outside of the States. So,
and it's a real advantage.
I agree completely. When one of four players on court has that special sauce and has, you know, 7, 8, 10 extra miles per hour on the ball because of the equipment, that's definitely something that not a level playing field, not something that makes it great when a player has that kind of advantage. So agree completely. Money is money, and regulating bodies are regulating bodies, and sometimes it's not always perfect or possible, and that is part of the stepping stone process to getting to legitimacy. And I think, you know, a lot of people get really upset about it, and I get that, but this is just how it works. You don't just snap your fingers and have everything legit. It's a process.
Yeah, and I will say, I think this is going to be kind of a little bit of the evolution as we see the PPAs going international, and I'm sure they're going to have their own testing and standards at their events. I don't think Australia is doing any testing, even though they're under the MLP umbrella. I'm not sure. Gotcha. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
But I think the next, you know, we've dealt with the tour wars for however long in the States, right, Adam? It's kind of like an ongoing joke. I think, especially with the Olympics just taking place in Paris, and, you know, we got LA in 28. I think we are going to really start seeing some jostling for the international regulation and international organizing body. I think that's kind of the next step in the tour wars, is that it's going to the global side, not just the fight between the U.S. governing bodies or the U.S. tours or leagues and all that stuff. So going global, and it's hopefully we can make it a bit more inclusive rather than divisive.
No, I agree. All I have to say is, this is part of the deal, guys. It's not easy. I mentioned the snap your fingers, especially when we add in a bunch of extra countries from all over the world. You just got to give them a little time, even if it is frustrating a little bit to get everything going. I thought I heard something where 2028 is out for pickleball Olympics, but 2032 is a really good option. And, you know, people love to make those posts about whatever, wall climbing or break dancing or all different kinds of stuff, of stuff that's in the Olympics. So why not pickle? And
we're not unified whatsoever.
Not unified.
I think,
okay.
The sport's plenty valid, right? You see in the other ridiculous sports in there. It's just, you know, the Olympics, the IOC, they've got I's to dot and T's to cross. And if you're an organized body that has everything in place that they need, then it's much easier. And we are just not that. So we've got to unify somehow.
All right. There you go. Robert, over here on the, not across the pond in the States, we had a MLP waiver wire situation. We had one previously. There was one set up for after the Kansas City event, which was right before the PPA. And I believe there's going to be one more waiver wire opportunity before we get into postseason play. And there was a lot of moves at the challenger level. Premier level, everybody stayed pat. No moves whatsoever. There was a trade, which involved Blaine Hovenier of the LA Mad Drops, someone who filled in nicely for Thomas Wilson. Hope everything's great with you, Thomas. And traded for Scarpa, Anderson, and some cash considerations that the Mad Drops received. So it was Scarpa and cash for Blaine Hovenier. And then also, so Hovenier going to the Las Vegas Night Owls. And actually, the Las Vegas Night Owls made a trade to acquire Rafa Hewitt. So now they have Rafa Hewitt, Blaine Hovenier, Zoe Wong, and Yudit Castillo. So a good bit of action and roster turnover for the Las Vegas Night Owls, who are in a pretty good position from a points per match situation, top couple in the Challenger League. So recently also, the Las Vegas Night Owls general manager, Caitlin Kerr, was let go, and Chris Patrick has filled in as the general manager of that team. So couple trades there. Thoughts on those trades before we get into some of the waiver wire action?
Yeah, I mean, what do you think the intention was on BLQK side? Just tank mode, get some cash, regroup.
Yeah,
and yeah,
so
you
like
know,
I mean,
hope they can get some W's with their team.
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure they're 100% mathematically eliminated, but their points per match is pretty low. And they've played quite a few matches, which is a big factor. Some teams have played 2/3 of their schedule. Some teams have only played 1/3. So harder for BLQK to make up some standing. So, this stuff is crazy. It's super similar to my fantasy baseball league. And bottom teams just tank it, get rid of all their expensive kind of right now talent for kind of up and comers or cash consideration, which is more what's happening on the MLP side of it. They also, BLQK, let Susanna Barr, I believe Susanna Barr was a trade also. And
to Atlanta.
For
Jeannie and cash.
Jeannie and cash. And then also Angie Walker was dropped for Emily Cederqvist. So I believe the Chicago Slice about a year and a half ago had won a challenger title with Cederqvist and Susanna Barr together. So I think that that makes a lot of sense to kind of route out the trade. So, quite a bit Atlanta, of roster turnover.
Atlanta just became, you know, your biggest rival, and in terms of going for the championship, in my opinion, I think it's you guys, and I think it's Atlanta. Atlanta's got what? Jaume, Todd, Susanna, and Emily.
Yeah, it's that's correct.
Team. It's a tough team.
Todd's playing some ball. Love the guys we have on the SoCal Hard Eights, but maybe I should have drafted him again because he is he is playing great, and Jaume, such a handful, especially in mixed, very hard to coach against. I'm not sure exactly what to tell the team to do when Jaume is, you know, not only coming over on the right side to take soft stuff. When he sees a straight ahead attack to the lady that is on the right side, he just jumps over there and counterattacks.
Which he's like, I got it. Right, you just back off. Yeah.
Something very special. I've never really done that before.
It's just it's just really quick for a step, you know?
Oh, man. It's like max speed instantly. So he just pushes off and he's there. And somehow, even for a smaller gentleman, is able to cover his backside when the opposing team plays that proper shot back behind him. So Jaume is tough. He's tough in all events. So I agree that is a very good team. I mean, I think that Las Vegas Night Owls got a bit better too.
I like Scarpa more than Scarpa's Javier.
Tough, man.
And, I like Scarpa more. And Rally and MLP, dude, he just doesn't give you much, right? So he's going to make a million balls.
Dude, and the dude is jacked, man. Like I think he actually has some, I don't know what it's called, but some form of medical condition about his sweating and dehydration. And one of the best options that he received was to put on muscle to help, I guess, retain some electrolytes and some water. But the dude is just, I mean, he's like 6'1", 6'2", and he is just filled out. He is not missing balls.
He's good at all three events.
All three. Yeah. I agree completely. So Scarpa, I mean, it's easy to just sleep on some of the guys that have been around a while, and you have to be careful to do that, because I think plenty of people are, whatever, digging deep off the court with their workout routines or adding some shots or stuff to their game. So you can't sleep on the veterans. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm a little bit off. They did not get slightly better. Maybe they just kind of stayed the same. We will have to see. But anyway, the Black Bears, who received Mo Alhouni in that trade for Rafa Hewitt, they were first up for the waiver wire, and they selected Chris Hayworth to fill in for Mo Alhouni, and Mo Alhouni was waived. So Hayworth, clearly single stud, top probably three in singles or four in singles right now.
Easily.
And I have not had a lot of time watching him on the doubles court. Have you seen him play a lot of doubles, and kind of how does he play and what does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I think exactly what anybody would think of a singles player that's really, really good. We're seeing most of these guys that are, you know, like the Kwang Gongs that are starting out as really, really good singles players turn into very good doubles players. So I don't know. To me, it was a little bit of a surprising pick. We talked about it, Adam, last week, I believe. But, Travis Rettmeyer was one of the guys that I sent a message to. And he was just like, you know, we've lost however many dream breakers. Like, we need to get better at singles. And I'm like, well, if you get better at doubles, you don't have to get better at singles.
Yeah, true.
Honestly, though, like, I don't know why, like, there's such a heavy emphasis on singles when, you know, doubles is, you want to rip off doubles wins. You don't want to go to a dream breaker. It's between 1 point and 2 points. So there's not a big difference between losing outright versus losing in a dream breaker. It's a single point. So have you had any more like clarity or insight around what the strategy is behind going for these high end singles players? Like Travis, they picked up Donald Young.
I mean, it's totally it's totally unsolved. I believe we had an event with a full slate of challenger and premier matches, and we had something like 16 or 17% went to a Dream Breaker. And yeah. then the very next event, there was like 40% of the matches went to a Dream Breaker. But I mean, when you're talking about overall points that you can affect in a match, when you're playing two full doubles matches, or you are playing singles 4 points at a time, I mean, I'm just throwing out a number here. I mean, it's like weighted 10% for singles, 45% for both mixed and gender. So you know, something like that. So yeah. I do think it's easy to have a team get in situations where they're in several Dream Breakers in a row and maybe overvalue it or panic a little bit. And that was just kind of what happened for those five matches or whatever. So I do think it's overvalued on the single side. But, you know, it's tough. It's tough to lose 4 of 5 Dream Breakers and maybe have a weak link in your singles game and not let that affect your decision-making on these waiver wire periods, even though I do think that's a bit of a mistake.
But again, it's like it's what we've talked about for a long time about MLP, and it's like this, it's just like the recency bias, right? And the what happened yesterday versus what happened over the course of, you know, 50 matches versus 2 matches. So like people aren't looking at real data. They're looking at yesterday's data.
We need data. We need more and more and more, and it'll start getting funneled in, and we'll get larger sample sizes and we'll be able to look at stuff at some point. But this is similar to the
piece
paddle.
It's a big piece of the betting aspect. Sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
We won't have proper betting until we have proper data and analytics.
Yeah, and it's one of those little steps to get there. It's just not going to happen overnight. But I do think it's something that is important in terms of team strategy and the betting aspect that you talk about. You know, people like numbers. They like reasons for making those decisions, even if, you know, some of that betting data is there for you to make the decision that they want you to make or whatever. Just having it there and having something to kind of sift through and dig through before making a bet is what people like to do. And that's definitely – betting is important. It just is. People love to do it, and it will take a sport. It'll let it allow it to grow in a healthy way for overall for everybody, in my opinion. So,
yeah,
we have the Florida Smash, as you mentioned. They had Yates Johnson, Martina Frantova, Tammy Emmerich, and Travis Rettenmeyer second. Waiver wire selection, they drop Tammy Emmerich and they pick up Krista Getcheva. So I would say that this is at best probably an even a wash.
It's
exactly.
Yeah.
And very next round, we have Martin Emmerich selected by the Bay Area Breakers for DJ Young. And DJ Young has had some wrist issues. He had a bit of rust in the Salt Lake City event. I know that. I talked to him personally. So, I think that certainly had some reasoning behind it, as I do not believe his wrist is 100%. And for a player like DJ, he needs that wrist and needs to be able to manipulate the ball. That's what he does best. Martin Emmerich, I thought, played great as a fill-in for the Chicago Slice in the Kansas City MLP event. Very solid. Lefty, of course. So I think that this makes sense for Bay Area, even if his overall upside is not quite what DJ Young's is.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And especially if I don't know the situation with DJ's wrist, but Martin does 13 cold plunges a day. So he takes care of that body. Uh-oh, we got a little AJ.
Oh my goodness gracious! It's a baby. It's a baby, AJ. AJ, who is that? AJ, who is that? AJ, who is it? Oh, he's giving you the stare down. Okay, AJ's going to the library. It didn't work today, and that's okay.
That's okay. We're like 2 for 3, 2 for 4. Yeah. That's a good batting average.
He's going to the library for story time. I like it how story time is, they keep it to about 20 minutes because there is just 20 kids going psychotic chaos. Up there. Just complete chaos.
I can't imagine.
Crying, sneezing, coughing, running into things, just the whole shebang. So glad we got him in there for a second.
I don't know if you know this, but I haven't checked a bag since probably 2005. So I'm going on 20 years of no check bags. I only carry on. And what's made that really easy for me over the past couple years are Selkirk backpacks. Because little do people know, you get a personal item and a carry-on on most carriers. And both items are big backpacks. I carry them on. I fill both of them to the brim. And they both count as carry-on. So I don't have to check a bag. It's important.
No, I'm right there with you. And that's the big boy. And I am past my playing days. So I do one big boy and one little smaller fella here that I can take with me from the hotel to the venue every single day. Leave the big boy there. Don't check bags. Get yourself some Selkirk gear. Small, medium, big, you need it.
I don't have the small. I need the small. Somebody send me the small. But yeah, you're right, because I can put my little laptop and I don't have to take the big one. It's important. Selkirk, send me a small. I'll buy it.
Tammy Emmerich was dropped from the Florida Smash, and a few picks later, she was picked up by the Frisco Pandas for Allie Phillips, was waived. Okay,
yep.
So now the Frisco Pandas have Stefan Averne, John Sincola, and they have actually not played a lot of matches recently, so they can make a move, because I believe they've only played about a third of their schedule. So Tammy Emmerich and Eva Radzikowska. Sorry, that's how you're supposed to say it. So, I mean, wild flurry of action in the Challenger. And I think it's cool. So kind of how it's set up, you're just not going to have many moves in the Premier, as they have to, if they're going to waive somebody, they have to dip all the way down to someone who is not playing Challenger. So you see the trades, but the waiver wire, it's quiet and not as exciting. You mentioned Donald Young. So the second round of Challenger waiver wire, you have two rounds. You have a possibility to make two waiver wire moves. Donald Young picked up and Yates Johnson was waived. So Donald, clearly, best event is singles coming over from some pro tennis action. He has had some solid score lines against good teams and doubles, but I'm not sure he's really made a breakthrough on the doubles court. And, often, not sure this is exactly the case, but when you are known as that single specialist, it does take a little time to get the quality partner.
Yeah.
So maybe Donald has had some lesser partners, but not a lot of huge doubles results for that one.
Yep. And that was in place of Yates. Yeah, I think, it's probably, I would say, as inconsistent as Yates can be, I still think he's probably a better option than Donald right now at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like Yates. I think he's a cool dude. Played solid with Viv David at this Kansas City PPA, I believe. I called the match. They had a tight game three with Jay DeVille and Callie Smith, who made a pretty nice run. So
makes a big deal having a partner like Viv David beside you. I mean, it I think that is an underrated thing. Is like, having a partner that is like that it makes you play better. It makes partners matter a lot.
No, it does. I mean, she's a rock. You know, she's not going to miss much. Makes pretty good decisions out there. Has some quality, up the line speed ups against the guy. And as I said, mid court play, drops, dinks, all that stuff is on point for Viv David. But I mean, really, if you think about it, I mean, is Donald Young better than Yates Johnson at singles? It's very Yates is good. I mean, I would say no. Yeah, I mean, at best for Donald, who seems like a very nice player with a lot of boxes checked to improve. I mean, Yates is a stud out there on the singles court, so I can't imagine that Donald is anything more than slightly better than Yates at singles.
Yeah, and I don't think he is. I think Yates just has more experience and a lot more reps still. Mm-hmm. But Donald has upside for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then the last move for the second round of Challenger waiver wire was, we already touched on it, that is Angie Walker getting waived. for the Atlanta Bouncers, and Emily Cederquist picked up Emily Ackerman for those of you who are late to the party. I mean, I looked at Emily Cederquist on draws for like two tournaments. And I was like, oh my God, I know everybody. Who is this girl? You know,
who is this?
And then I realized it was Emily Ackerman. So yeah, so tons of action. That pretty much is a light breakdown of all the moves. And yeah, you know, it's a little ways till I believe the New York event is next. So we'll see how it all pans out for everybody. But still fun to see the turnover at the challenger level and teams trying to make moves and improve the roster. I think Anna Bright made a tweet that 17 of the 40, only 17 of the 40 people drafted in challenger are still on the same team that they were drafted for. So that's less than half. And that's a lot of turnover.
That is a lot, but it makes it fun for us. Makes fun storylines.
No, definitely.
One thing, I talked to Susanna a little bit over here, and she was mentioning that she thinks having a lefty guy is almost, unless I would say no, like is a disadvantage, because it, I think her example was she was returning. Did you guys play Susanna's team?
Yes, so we played her at Salt Lake. Seemed like she was a little bit nervous and a little off her game, and then I thought she played very well at the Kansas City MLP just a couple weeks later. Continue.
Yeah, so she just, she made it. She felt like her having to return the guy serve the entire match really put her at a disadvantage, unless your lefty guy has bombs too, right, and can really... Gotcha. And can really crush their girl. But it didn't sound like that was the case. So that is just like an interesting aspect of Rally where, you know, you could be locked into having to deal with somebody that has a massive serve if you're a female playing with a lefty guy. So she thinks having a lefty guy is actually slightly a disadvantage. And thinking about it, it's like there's not, I don't know, none of the lefty guys have big serves. Not like big.
I mean, I'd say Rafa's is pretty solid, but yeah, Martin Imrich, I love his game overall, but he was kind of laying it in there. Yeah, he was kind of laying it. But also, I think it actually is somewhat specific to Susanna, too. Love Susanna's game. She's got a lot of funk and a lot of great setup, very linear player.
Yeah.
So she drives through her return.
Flat.
Flat, very aggressive. So it gets to her opponent quickly, and let's be clear, she's 44 or 45. She's 44 or 45 years old. Not a knock at all. That's just what the situation is. So I could see that being an issue with her on her court positioning for her first volleys. So that is definitely a statement that makes sense to me from Susanna.
Yeah,
it's a little things. I mean, just small little things like that with MLP, slightly different serve rules too. So they want to weaponize the serve. There's less issues as long as you're hitting up or your wrist is above the paddle, then everything's good. So the contact point is higher than some of the PPA events or the PPA events. So, all that baked in and returning the guy serve every single time. If you were on the left for Susanna makes it's something
it's
different.
Tough.
It's something different. Yeah.
Yep.
Let's see here. All right. I got some notes here on the PPA recap. Do you have anything you would like to squeeze in, Robert, or should we carry on with that?
Now feels like a good time for tip of the week.
Woo!
And I would just say this one is more for it goes in line with talking about the return and Susanna maybe struggling with the return and getting all the way to the line after it. It's about your partner. You know, if you see somebody getting blasted with serves and is really trying to fight it off and isn't making it to the line, like it's really your job, especially in mix, but whether it's gender or mix, to come over and protect your partner on the fourth. And you can do this by really baiting it. Like you bait the hold, and then last second you kind of crush over to take that first volley, whether you're on the left or the right, doesn't really matter. But It's yeah, it's kind of just baiting that you're staying where you are, and then as you see that return, as long as it's not like a high fluffy return in the midcourt where they can hit it wherever they want, if it's relatively decent and kind of further back, you can hold your spot and then bounce over to cover your partner if they're not going to get all the way in. So it's just and that's something that's easy not to do. It's easy to just hold your position and just be like, well, they hit a crappy return. Hopefully they can handle this fourth, where it's really a conscious effort of like, okay, I need to really get active here as the off the ball partner and make my presence known in the middle to protect my partner on that return and getting in.
No, I like that. And I think it's important actually to not necessarily just fully hang out. Because that opens up some go behind you opportunities for your opponents. So if you are kind of holding on your side and then you make that jab step or that lateral movement to kind of protect when often your opponent is going to be targeting your partner transitioning and they don't have kind of that visually, it's interesting when you are already squeezing the middle. And I actually think of it as in a similar situation as doing the Ernie. If you are constantly faking and you are just kind of hanging out over there in the corner looking for Ernies, I don't think you're going to get many opportunities. But if you hold your ground and you read the situation and then you make a move, or you wait till the last second possible to make that move, you're going to get more shots hit to you and more opportunities for that Ernie. And I think that that applies also to protecting your partner. So I think that is definitely a good thought. And we've talked multiple times with tips about possibly affecting your return to not have to deal with the shake and bake, and partner protection goes right in line with that. So I think that that's a good call. And read the situation, make your move accordingly. If you're just hanging out in a spot, you could get yourself in a little bit of trouble with the third shot options of your opponent.
Yeah. And I think another underrated thing to do is, especially if you're on the switch or if you're struggling to get into the kitchen line, throw up a lofty return. As long as it's relatively deep, you're better off hitting a lofty return that lands kind of no man's land towards the baseline if you're able to get set at the kitchen line. I would say getting set at the kitchen line is more important than trying to crush a return and getting 3 feet off the kitchen line to get in because you have less time. I think, you just need to be still when you're hitting that first volley, and you need to be still at the kitchen line.
This is where some data comes in. Like when we start getting some information about like
this player gets to the kitchen line off the return. Yeah.
Right. With points one, when you are not established on your first volley, or when you are making your split step right on the kitchen line and ready to contact like that, it's so hard just as a human to kind of grasp 100 of those situations and like know what the percentage is. So when you get this info and this data about little things like that, it can really affect shot selection, what you're doing, and kind of knowing like, oh man, I thought I was 50-50 on that. No, you're about 22% on that one instead. So the strategy is going to change as we get more and more information for sure.
And not even just that. It's like, oh yeah, so it's that percentage, but man, my percentage on missing my forehand volley versus my backhand volley when I get to the line is twice as much as my forehand misses twice as much as my backhand. That's what I got to work on. Yeah. Once we have data like that, it's going to also be really easy for players to identify like what, you know, where are their pain points, and not like, that's a really not like a not obvious one, right? Like if you're rushing to the kitchen line off a switch as the returner and you miss a volley, you don't always remember. Was that a backhand volley or a forehand volley? Yes. You asked me after the match. Yeah. I don't necessarily remember or know. I just know I biffed it into the net. So to have real data on where you're actually making these errors and ones that aren't like consistent over and over, but ones that happen enough to where there's real data behind it is going to be super interesting. And the game's just going to keep changing and people are going to be able to identify where their holes are and how to plug those holes. And it's just going to make the quality that much better.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see different patterns, different strategies. It's going to affect a ton. So I couldn't agree more. I mean, wild amount of pickle going on. We had like a special event, Pickle and Pucks in Aspen. We had the English Open. We have MLP, Kansas City, and now like 4 weeks in a row of PPA action. So this is a pretty wild stretch. And as I mentioned, that PPA in Kansas City, piggybacking with the MLP Kansas City, much better weather situations, as it was like high 70s, around 80 degrees, and which is
lovely.
Yeah, which is what what people have told me. I was taking Ubers and stuff, and the drivers are like, it's never like this in the Midwest at this time of year. So we got a little bit lucky after a very hot MLP Kansas City. And let's go ahead and start with women's singles. Kate Fahey of the St. Louis Shock for Major League Pickleball had to qualify. She comes out and beats number 2 seed Leah Jansen first round. And actually, this is a note, women's qualifying of doubles and singles is same day. So the men's, there's so many more qualifying players, they actually do it on a previous day than the event. So Kate Fahey goes out there, qualifies, beats Leah Jansen, and then makes a run all the way to Championship Sunday. Ben Johns, Annalee Waters did not play their respective singles events because of that event in Aspen. And she played Brooke Buckner on Championship Sunday, and Brooke Bazooka Buckner was striping some ground strokes, and so was Faye. He ended up being 11-8 in the third for Buckner, but a pretty nice match for the ladies, and quite a bit of ground stroke play with the ladies occasionally sneaking in. So clean ground strokes, a lot of athleticism. Fahey's a great mover. I believe Buckner has the power advantage, but pretty cool match to watch.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of that's where women's singles is going to be. It's like when we thought about, or like when like the Sampras era kind of phased out in tennis, right? It's like you can't serve and volley and chip and charge anymore because the passing shots are too good. And that's kind of what it's like in women's. It's the passing shots are too good. So coming in, it's got to be, you've got to be coming in on a ball where your opponent's on like the full run. Right. And it's, you have it deep. Like I remember in tennis, like you just grind and drill approach shots over and over, deep slice, deep, heavy slice, you know, to the backhand, come in. It's going to turn into that where you can't come in unless it's a really, really good approach. And yeah, I think we're going to see a lot more baseline play unless like you have a freak of a specimen of a woman who's, you know, who has the wingspan to cover at the kitchen line and can come in off returns. But right now we don't have that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, probably the closest thing to that is Leah Jansen, and she was beaten by Kate Fahey, who was, and another thing about the ladies is the rolls are very good. So they have the rip through the court, traditional passing shots, but the rolls on both forehand and backhand, kind of mid pace, forcing their opponents to hit up on the first volley and then possibly passing on the next. Like that's a big deal. So timing on when to come in for the ladies is huge. Congratulations to Buckner, her second title this year. And for the fellas singles, such a deep draw, variety of upsets throughout. Tyson McGuffin, just keeps getting it done. Beat Federico Stakstrud in a crazy semifinal where Fed kind of lost it a little bit. He destroyed his paddle in the middle of the court and left some electrical tape and lead tape on there. So he actually had to get one of the referees to come and wipe it off. He said a couple colorful things in Spanish throughout that match. I thought he actually maybe should have got a point penalty. Tyson got called for a high serve toss release warning and point penalty. So this was also after a rain delay, so it was like at 10:15 at night. So there was some wild stuff going on in that men's semifinal. And after Federico lost, he kind of went underneath the bleachers right next to the commentary booth, and I could kind of hear him bashing his paddle about 17 times on the ground. So some real frustrations there from Fed. And Connor Garnett made it through on the other side of the bracket. And Connor Garnett in game one on Championship Sunday, golden pickled Tyson. Tyson did not serve 11 in a row from Connor Garnett. Golden pickle. Then Connor loses game two, 11-2, and then a fairly comfortable game three win. So, I mean, wild stuff in men's singles. Also, Connor Garnett's second title of the year, just like Brooke Buckner on the PPA Tour.
Go, CG.
Any thoughts on some of that wild information I just threw your way?
No, it's fun. it's fun to get some varying results, right? So it's the usual suspects, you know, at the late in the draws, but to get a CG win over Tyson's pretty fun. To get a Tyson win over Fed's good to see. See Fed get pissed off, that's fun too. It's all fun.
yeah, it's fun.
I like it.
Quang Duong took a fairly early had a fairly early exit, and actually Zhao Mei in the quarterfinal before Fed played Tyson, Zhao Mei actually had match points against Fed in game three on a wild match on grandstand. So these are fun results, fun storylines.
Rafa Hewitt beat Alshon.
I called that match. That was wild. Rafa's inside out forehand and just flat out up the line forehand when he was spread out to his forehand side was ridiculous. I mean, to pass Christian over and over and over again with that shot is crazy, especially with the court coverage at the kitchen for Alshon. So, yeah. Shout out to the veteran, Rafi Hewitt, winning, I believe, three matches in the main draw for singles. So, very, very cool stuff. Mixed was another fun draw. Alshon and Etta Wright, Texas Rancher teammates of Major League Pickleball, had a wild match in the quarterfinal against Anna Lee and Ben. Crazy scramble points. Pushed off the kitchen line, freak athleticism from Alshon and Etta Wright getting a ton of balls back. The number one seeds were able to get it done in game three, but that was a very fun one. And then Georgia and JW Johnson on Championship Sunday went to five with Ben and Anna Lee, and the Johnsons were playing through Ben. I'm talking 80%+ of shots were going to the left side fella and mixed doubles, and it was almost good enough to get it done. Wild patterns and wild shot making from everybody. Very, very fun matchup. Georgia Johnson, just hand speed and power is insane. Ben kept doing his little low backhand flip in the heart of the match, and Georgia was just punishing it over and over again. Very cool patterns, as I mentioned, and a fun dynamic in that match.
Yeah, and if anybody sees that forehand roll as much as Georgia, I don't know who it is, because J-Dub's flicking those at her all day, every day. So she sees that ball a lot. And that's fun. It's a typical result. I heard some rumblings online. I didn't see it, about the men's bronze match. Did you see it or hear about it?
I did not. I know what the score line was, and it was not close for the John's eye.
Big H and
Big H. Big oh my God, I called one of his matches. Alshon. Big H and Alshon. Yeah. So I believe it was like 3-4 or something like that in the bronze medal match against the John's eye, who were we might as well just play into the men's doubles, as Fed and Tardio beat the Johns brothers and then beat in three games in convincing fashion JW Johnson and Dylan Frazier. So Tardio, man,
Tardio's a nightmare for people.
The new wave of right side player. Like when Fed is dinking cross court with the other left side male, Gabe is just straddling the center line. And he's all arms and legs. He stays balanced. He takes dinks out of the air. He takes speed ups out of the air. He has top spin forehand lob. And he was just peppering the right hip of whoever was in front of him. It was very impressive. And he was eating pepperoni pizza on the timeouts. So this is what it is to be a teenager. No fear, eating pepperoni pizza and beating the best players in the world. A very fun match. And Fed just, he just doesn't miss. I mean, he doesn't make poor decisions. He doesn't miss. I'm
done. We talked about this last week.
Yeah, it's insanity. So Congratulations to those guys, and they did not have a soft draw. They beat the best, and they deserve all of it.
Yeah, I mean, and straight games in the finals tells you all you need to know there. So, yeah, crazy good result.
Catherine and Annalie are too good. That's about all I have for that. And Rob, I wanted to mention something here. Our lovely producer, Josh, just froze me out in Kansas City. We were going to grab
that's
a
what
beer.
I heard. I was like,
yeah,
you didn't get together. He was like, ah, pretty busy.
Busy. He threw me the old friend routine that he had to meet up with. Yeah, right. Mm. So I'm ready to go. I'm thinking about. Yeah, Josh. So what happened? I'm telling it to the people right now. You weren't messing with me. This is real. This is real stuff.
Josh, it says you're not being recorded. Can we get you being recorded?
Okay.
This is nonsense.
Okay, he tried. That's all he's giving me right now is I tried. Okay, I guess I'll take it.
I tried. Yeah.
It was the Selkirk. The PPA Selkirk Kansas City Open. So there was quite a bit of crew down there. Cooper Flagg, some content people, I believe. Cooper Deck. Did I say Cooper Flagg? Oh, that's the basketball player. That's the basketball player. Cooper Deck. Yeah, that's my fault, Cooper. Yeah. Maybe I did that on purpose because you didn't have an IPA with me either. Man. Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. These guys. Trust me, if you guys want to have an IPA with anybody, it's Adam Stone. What are you doing?
That's what I'm saying. So
saw Eric Lang. First time I saw Eric Lang in England, he goes, Adam Stone, man, that guy walks into the room. He didn't even have to say anything. I start laughing. He's just so ridiculous.
That's what you're missing, Josh.
That's what you're missing, Cooper Flagg.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good time. And that's part of being an MLP coach. You have to facilitate a fun environment for your players. And, you know, maybe I lack elsewhere and I certainly lack elsewhere. But in terms of that, I am the glue for the team in terms of a good time. So it's your guy's loss. We had.
And if they're not having a good time, you're having a good time.
That's right. I'm always having a good time. I think his name is like Tate Ingebretson. He was the one presenting the trophies. There were some other content people for Selkirk. So it was fun to see the Selkirk crew at a live event. And it's always fun to see people when you haven't seen them before. So you have this back and forth on emails. We see him, we see his face on the podcast as a producer, but then you see him in real life and you're just like, hey, it was just like 3'5"-8" guys looking completely regular, regular middle-aged dudes. And we were, it was good. So, it was a fun weekend, and I was in Kansas City probably a couple days too long. I think it was 12, but enjoyed it. And
that's a long time in KC.
Long stretch. That's about all I have. Anything you want to add, Robert? I feel like I've been talking a lot the last 20 minutes.
This is good. I like this. We got a big PPA in Bristol. We won't go too much into that.
Oh yeah, sure.
But you know, Bristol is where I spend a week out of the month, so. They've been preparing and planning and doing probably, I would guarantee they've done more work than any other facility or venue that the PPA is stopping at this year in terms of prep and getting the city behind it. So this is, you know, this is what I always talked about before is like what I love about Beer City and Grand Rapids is that, you know, they treat it as like their own, like they have ownership over that stop, right? And they want the players to have a great time. They want to put on a good show. And I just feel like we need more of that to where every city and every stop doesn't feel the exact same. And I made that clear with, you know, kind of with the prep in Bristol is like, this is a really important piece is like, you want this stop to be uniquely Bristol and have your own kind of personality come out because it's better for the players. It's better for the people watching on the stream. If you have your own, if everything just doesn't look the same week in and week out, you know? So they got some fun stuff lined up for the players on Wednesday, I believe, where they're going to go to the Speedway, do some laps in the cars, Bristol Motor Speedway. So that'll be a fun experience. They're going to do, so Bristol State Street is kind of the main street downtown, and The southern half is Tennessee. The northern half is Virginia, right across the street. So I know they're going to set up, they're going to block off the State Street from traffic. They're going to set up a pickleball court where the net is basically on the state line. So you'll have two players playing in Tennessee, two players playing in Virginia, and you're going to have kind of the battle of the states. They're going to have a band on a stage with live music and food and drinks down there. It's going to be a really cool atmosphere and festival. So that's Bristol this weekend. I'm going to Mumbai tomorrow for Monsoon. Going to hang out with Mr. UV a little bit ahead of time. Malin's going to meet me over. We're working on a visa issue, but Malin's going to get on a plane, hoping her visa comes through for India, and we're going to roll the dice, Heart 8 style, and meet at the airport at Heathrow, and hopefully she's able to get on that plane to Mumbai with me tomorrow.
Yeah. UV, South Bombay, baby. Let's go.
South Bombay. Stay out of that North Bombay. Only South Bombay,
no,
bro.
South Bombay. Let's go. No, that's great. I didn't even realize. I knew you were going. I didn't know it was so quick. So that's perfect, man. I'm in India, man. A lot of people there. Let's get them pickling. They already are. Let's keep it rolling. And that's really cool about Bristol. And I like it. You know, you don't. I mean, summer tournaments are just going to be the same. It's a similar setup. Yeah. It's the PPA doing all those stops, but having some special little ones. You know, a lot of people love in the San Clemente, and you have a special thing in mm-hmm. Bristol, and you have something cool at each of the stops. I think that's great. Championship Court was a lot cooler. It's been a point of emphasis on the PPA to have some like walkout videos for the players. Some introductions. There was a girl I hadn't seen before doing the emceeing. Thought she did a great job. They had pickleball, beer pong out on the court when there was a break. You know, some of the fans coming out there. They did a push-up challenge, and it was a really fun atmosphere on Championship Court. And I expect little things like that to continue to build and make the event special for the people that come to them. Very cool to hear that Bristol is completely on board with that kind of stuff. Great.
Yeah. Are you heading to Bristol or no?
I have Bristol off. So I have like 3 weekends in a row after Bristol. So Dave Fleming will be there for Bristol. And then I am filling in for Dave, who is not going to Salt Lake City, which is the following weekend. So you start getting, you know, back to back. That's going to happen every so often. You start doing 3 in a row or 4 in a row with all the travel. It's pretty tough, especially with a little one. So short break for me. And then I'll be on the mic for several, I think 4 PPAs in a row after that. So good stuff, man. Good stuff.
A little AJ being like, who's this man?
Yeah, it's just this man. And like I when I left, I had a beard, and I came back and I was like, I was shaved. Yeah. And just like
he's
looking
like terrified
at me,
of you.
Like, who is this dude? Who is this dude? All good though. Part of the deal with the travel, and you know, I can't complain about anything. I like my job with MLP and in the booth for some commentary. So let's go.
Let's go. Well, we'll have an update on, I'll have an update. I'll be doing this from India next week, so we'll do that. We'll have an update on what happened in Bristol, and then we can do a little preview for the Monsoon Championship, which is going to be not this week but next week. So with Jay DeVilliers going over, Kwang Dong's going over, so got some PPA guys heading that way, which will be fun. So
lovely.
I never see those guys. Never played Kwang. That'd be fun.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. He hits the ball well. Hasn't found some slippery, deceptive shots. You kind of know what you're going to get, but he hits it consistent and he hits it well. So his doubles game is growing, but that's awesome to see some of those guys going over. And I mean, you got a French guy, you got a guy from Southeast Asia. You got a lot going on, and people love that variety. So it's great. It's great.
Yeah, be a lot of fun. So let's do it again next week, baby.
Signing off.
Adios.